Well, once a week, Joshua Warren joins us with his paranormal moment. And this week, the five scariest cryptids. So get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. So once a week, Joshua P. Warren goes hunting in the paranormal world. And he's back with another weekly report. Josh, how are you?
I'm a little bit scared, George.
It
takes a lot to creep me out, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And, you know, sometimes when I do your show here, people email me afterwards and they say, I could not go to sleep after I heard what you were talking about. Now, I must warn the listeners, this could be one of those hours because, as you said, it's about the five scariest cryptids, and it's not easy for a person like me to take all these things that I've investigated and condense them down into a list of scariest, but I've got some pretty good ones tonight.
Well, let's make a disclaimer. For those who are faint at heart, you might want to go away for a little bit.
All right. Well, everybody's been properly warned.
Absolutely.
And let me just start by saying that when I talk about cryptids...
By the way, I'm leaving, so you've got the hour to yourself.
Okay. Even you are too frightened for this material, huh?
Well, it's late, Josh. You got to get to bed later.
Yeah. It's strange when you start thinking about this idea that there are perhaps beings that are infiltrating our world once in a while that sort of defy our definitions of what is supposed to be possible, the things that are supposed to exist. And, you know, my great friend and colleague, Micah Hanks, who is a lemur investigator and also the publisher of the popular Graylian Report, which is often linked up under the news section of coasttocoastam.com, he assembled a list of what he felt were the five scariest cryptids. And so we began talking about this idea, and I took what he put together and some of my own thoughts and some of the investigations that I've done recently, you know, being out there in the field, and I've put together this list because I think these are things that can come and get you. And it's one thing to accept that, according to the traditional cryptozoologist, obviously there are animals out there that are ordinary biological organisms we just haven't discovered yet that are running around in the woods and the jungles. But these creatures, I really prefer to call phantomals because they transcend what we accept as something that could be a normal physical form. And, of course, as you know, I frequently talk about this idea that many of these beings we discussed are interdimensional, and it's important for me to sort of clarify what I mean by that every time I come on the show. If you consider that at the most basic level, you and I are walking around in a 3D world, a three-dimensional world, and then you think about the concept of a two-dimensional world, and this was a concept that was put forth by an English scholar named Edwin Abbott in the 1800s. He wrote a book called Flatland, in which he imagined that, you know, if there were a world of two-dimensional things that only had length and width and no concept of up and down, we would look on that world and we would see it in a completely different way because those little two-dimensional beings can only see what's directly in front of them or to the left or to the right. But as a three-dimensional creature, we are able to look down and see through their world. We see what's inside the houses, what's outside the houses. And if we were to actually move down and try to visit them, then we would sort of magically appear from their point of view. And then when we moved out, we would magically disappear. And in fact, Carl Sagan illustrated this just beautifully in a little video that I recommend everybody check out who wants to understand interdimensionals. At coasttocoastam.com, there's a link to joshuapwarren.com where I put up this Carl Sagan video. And that's important to remember because some of these phantomals, they just sort of appear and they disappear. And yet while they are here, they are completely physical, tangible, In fact, just recently, you know, I was visiting the Greystone Estate in Barnardsville, North Carolina, and there has been a large amount of information, many sightings about this tall, hairy creature that people have seen. And this is more than just a report once in a while, because there was, in fact, a family that lived at the Greystone Estate, and they had, of all things, a pet goat. And one night they heard this goat crying and screaming, and the next morning they came out, and the goat was, torn in half. I mean, half of the goat was gone. And they found bipedal footprints there. Now, we're not talking about some sort of an illusory object or being that just comes in and vanishes and does nothing. No, while they are here, they can do physical things. And that's why it's frightening for me to go down this list of top five. If you put yourself in that mindset that these are creatures that you can actually encounter. And so let's just start with number five. And number five, and by the way, number one is just horrific. And I mean, it's controversially horrific. There's a little teaser for everybody. But let's start with number five. Number five are devil dragons. And I've tried to sort of pick things that also maybe a lot of the listeners haven't heard about.
Devil dragons.
I investigated this property in Lancaster, South Carolina, owned by a woman named Lynn Jackson. And this property has a vast, complex, disturbing history of all kinds of slavery and warfare and things like that to boot. But a few years ago, her 14-year-old son went outside to the barn to water the troughs of some of their animals, because they have all kinds of different, you know, typical farm animals on this property. And he came screaming and running back into the house because he saw in the barn something that he could only describe as a dragon. It was a huge creature with piercing eyes and these big flapping wings. And
jeez.
Lynn at first thought he had to be making this up. And so she went out two nights later, and she saw one of these things. And you can imagine when you come face to face with a huge creature with these big type, bat wings, and it looks like it's going to eat you, it's terrifying. It strikes a primordial chord. But here's the thing that makes this report so special. Lynn is a photographer. And so she started going out afterward with her camera every night until she captured at least two good photographs of one of these devil dragons. And when you see these photographs, the devil dragons look very much like pterodactyls, but they have long necks, serpentine faces, forked tongue, and one picture seems to be sticking out. And they seem kind of misty in the picture, but when you see them up close and personal, they have more of a substantive appearance.
Could this be what people have construed Mothman to be?
You know, there may be a connection there, because when I looked into the history of this property on South Carolina, I found that there were a lot of dinosaurs that are documented. You know, fossils have been found. That these dinosaurs lived there, and these could be dinosaur ghosts, which is why I call them phantomals. If a large winged creature, like some sort of a Mothman figure, has lived at some point in the past, and we don't necessarily have the fossil record for it yet, we might actually be encountering some type of an apparition. Or this could simply be one of those examples that I frequently talk about, of animals that exist right on that little boundary between here and there. You know, because physicality is a very relative thing. If you and I were made of radio waves, then radio waves would seem like a big wall to us, a solid wall, and we couldn't walk through them because we'd be resisting each other. These things, I believe, are right on that buffer zone between what we consider physical and non-physical. And they sort of slip in and out at times. And I hope that you'll go and look at the pictures of this, because This is the only one of these extreme cryptids that has actually been photographed. And I mentioned at coasttocoastam.com, there is a link to my site, joshuapwarren.com. There's no period after the P. And you can see for yourself these creatures. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, George, because, you know, these things are so distinct that you can't deny that, honestly photographed, there is some type of a big, crazy, dragon-like winged creature that's sort of hovering there in the air.
That's amazing.
Now, that is, of course, number five, because it's creepy, it terrifies people, but it doesn't necessarily come after you and want to eat you.
All right, number five, devil dragons, right?
Devil dragons are number five. Number four, in my opinion, should be the bat squatch. And the bat squatch is one of the rarest of the cryptids, but every time I read about the bat squatch, it creeps me out. And the bat squatch, the best case of somebody encountering a bat squatch happened on April 23rd of 1994 near Mount Rainier, Washington. There was this 18-year-old young man named Brian Canfield, and he was driving home late in the middle of the woods in this old pickup truck, and all of a sudden, this very tall, hairy creature with huge wings lowered from the sky into his headlights. And this thing had bluish hair and a wolfish face, little tufts on its ears, glowing yellow eyes. And the creepiest thing is when this big beast lowered, his truck engine actually stopped. So here he is, sitting there helpless, looking at this thing, and it's staring right into his eyes, and then it started flapping its huge wings, and it was rocking his truck. So this shows you the amount of physical force that was being produced by these wings flapping. And so the young man sitting there, you know, petrified, paralyzed with fear, and this bat squatch, as we call it, walked closer to the truck, began looking in the windows, if you can imagine how terrifying that is.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And then it just ascended and went back up into the sky. Now, we have many reports along these lines, but this is one of the best documented, and I'm impressed by the fact that there was actually a seasoned reporter for the Tacoma News Tribune, a guy named C.R. Roberts, who interviewed him. And he went on the record saying, you know, quote, "I believe his story. I believe he saw something, and I have no idea what he saw," end quote. And, you know, reporters, they interview people all the time, and they hopefully kind of have a sense of what seems to be real and what's not. And so the helplessness of being in that situation in those woods and seeing that kind of a creature come down and then just, you know, fly away and disappear, that's terrifying. And yet, once again, the creature did not hurt him. But now we get into the more violent creatures. These are the ones that you have to really fear. They will come for your blood.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, one of the strangest, the Wendigos. Now, this comes from Native American lore. And I have looked into some of the Wendigo reports, and it's very difficult to try to categorize. You know, people say they've seen a Wendigo. Basically, according to the Native Americans, these are big, hairy, shape-shifting giants, and they once were human, but those humans resorted to cannibalism. And once they began to eat human flesh, it distorted their spirits and their bodies in this very disgusting manner. And if you now see them in pure form, they look like sort of shaggy monsters with these glowing orange eyes and long yellow fangs, and they got dripping tongues. But they supposedly can kind of shift into whatever shape is going to get them closest to you so they can eat you. And the thing that's so shocking to me about this is that at least one man in the early 1900s, a guy named Jack Fiddler, a Cree Indian, he actually killed at least 14 people on his reservation and even went to prison at the age of 87 as a serial killer because he swore to the very end that he was killing people who are actually Wendigos, these cannibals. And so, you know, we've talked a lot about people who just sort of vanish and there's no trace of them. And I've told you that I even had a great uncle who disappeared. Uh-huh. It was a big, you know, tragedy in my family. Makes you wonder, you know, is it possible that some of these beings can just sort of appear and eat you? And it happens quickly, and that's that. But, you know, the Wendigo is so weird. It ties into some of the Skinwalker Ranch kind of stuff. Because how do you try to approach and define something that's shape-shifting all the time? Very weird and creepy. But, of course, then we move on to number two. And number two...
Sounds like you're working your way up to a horror.
Oh, let me tell you, when I get to number one, I even wondered whether or not I wanted to talk about number one on this show.
You have to. You know that.
And the reason is because it is so weird and controversial and so horrifying. Well,
all right.
Let's
number
get to
two.
Number two.
We'll get to number one.
Number two, you've probably heard this word over and over and over, but until you actually think about what it means, the real impact doesn't seem to set in. I did a lot of research in one of my books called Pet Ghosts on the fact that most of us have probably come into contact at one point or another with a dog that was mad, that was vicious, that we thought was going to attack us.
I got attacked by a dog when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah, and it, you know, Joshua, I got to tell you, it scared the heck out of me. I was petrified of dogs for years until later on I ended up owning them all. But, I mean, this thing came coming, it came running at me. He came at me. He jumped on me. He bit me. We had to wait to see if it had rabies. It was horrible.
Well, you know, I have a Rottweiler, and I have this Rottweiler for protection, and I sometimes look at him. His name is Odin, and I think, you know, his skull is bigger than some of the black bears around here, and his teeth are so long, and I think to myself, I'm sure glad this is my pet. Because if ever the day comes that he decides to turn, I don't, you know how I would defend myself against him. And that's why number two on the list would be the hellhounds. And the hellhounds have a tradition that goes back at least to the 700s. Actually, I think maybe 800, 856 might have been the earliest good report from France.
Is that like that dog we saw in the Omen movies?
It's very similar.
Like,
you know, these are big, muscly, hulking, Rottweiler-like dogs that suddenly appear in the midst of this demonic red mist. They have fiery rage in their eyes, and they just proceed without hesitation to start tearing people to shreds. And I think the creepiest story that really set the precedent for the hellhounds came from the year 1577 in Bungay, England, at the St. Mary's Church. Oh, during one day when there was a church procession taking place, this thunder and lightning storm started raging outside, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the procession, this hellhound appeared, and before anybody knew what was going on, three people were already dead. He had torn their throats out. He had torn their limbs off. There was this extreme heat radiating from him that was burning people around him. In fact, there was a poet from back then who wrote this verse that I find memorable. He said, "All down the church in midst the fire, the hellish monster flew, and passing onward to the choir, he many people slew." And then, well, it got worse from there. And I know we have to take a break, so maybe I should continue on the other side, George.
We will do that and also get to this number one creature, whatever that is. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Simeon Hine joins us as we talk about crop formations. Then the last hour of the show, History is Wrong. That's right, we're bringing you Eric von Daniken, author of Chariot of the Gods. He will be on live from Switzerland for the final hour on Coast to Coast AM. When we come right back, phone calls with Joshua P. Warren. We'll talk a little bit more about hellhounds. And then, yes, his number one cryptid. Also, a security police sergeant just called Gina and said he's so scared, so terrified by these stories that he's ready to pull out his shotgun when he gets out of his car. That's scary. Back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast. We'll take your phone calls. We're with Joshua P. Warren. Joshua, let's finish up with hellhounds and then get into the cryptid number one.
Yeah. And cryptid number one is just awful. I shudder when I think about it. But, a lot of people, especially, the Europeans, they believe that the hellhounds are part of Satan's hunting pack, and that these are creatures that he commands in the very same way that we command our dogs to do various things for us, and that sometimes they attack people who oppose him. In other cases, they protect him, and it's very intriguing when you see that some of the most incredible hellhounds have come from, church sermons. And so at that particular time in 1577 at this church in Bungay, as this creature was tearing people limb from limb and radiating heat that would actually sort of shrivel people up around him and scorch things around him, and he was so heavy and dense that masonry was crumbling under him and hitting people and knocking them out and killing them. It was just absolute chaos. And then just as quickly and suddenly as he appeared, he just vanished. And 10 miles down the road, this hellhound reappeared at a second church and did the same thing, tore people apart. It was a horrible, bloody, gruesome scene. And this time, as the hellhound ran from the church, the heat radiating from him was so intense that it left a burn on the big, heavy wooden door of the church that is visible to this day. And in order to sort of solidify the seriousness of this episode, that community in Bungay put the hellhound on the top of its coat of arms, and it is there to this very day. Because this was not just a story. All the historians of the time recorded this as being real, and the people who died, they were in great sorrow from this tragedy. And the idea that these horrific dogs can appear and be focused on killing you, that's pretty darn scary.
That's scary, but it's not as scary as number one, is it?
Number one. Okay, here we go.
All right.
George, have you ever heard of Papa Bawa?
Papa Bawa?
Yeah.
It's New Guinea, isn't it?
Actually, Papa Bawa comes from Zanzibar, which is part of Tanzania in East Africa.
Okay.
And Papa Bawa is a Swahili name, and it translates literally into bat wing. Papa Bawa is this tall, about 7 foot tall, black, winged, horrifying, demonic being that appears in the homes of people in that area at night, especially men. And Papa Bawa manifests in the bedroom at night. He presses the men, or whoever his victims are, there have been men, women, and children, but especially men, he presses them to the bed and viciously molests them. I'm talking violent, so terrible, that to me it's disturbing when you read the accounts. I mean, for example, I have an account here from a 55-year-old farmer who said that he was attacked. His name was Majaka Hamad, and he said that he was lying there sleeping. All of a sudden, he was pushed to his mattress, and this thing actually, it raped him. And the creepiest thing about it is that after this occurred, Papa Bawa leaned down, as he does time and time again, and these cases sort of reached a climax in 1995, but they are still reported. And I know this sounds so unbelievable. You got to look this up to see for yourself. I'm not making this up. Papa Bawa actually then would lean down and whisper in this horrifying voice and say, "If you don't tell everybody you know what has happened to you, I will come back in 1 week, and you will experience twice the pain that I have given you this night."
How do we know this isn't some real sicko out there?
Well, because the people who see Papa Bawa, they describe him as this figure who appears, does this to them, and then disappears. And it's so horrifying. It's so terrible. I mean, if you go down there, and the Fortean Times did a big piece about this October of last year.
It's like the old hag times 10.
Times 10. And they say that he becomes enraged if his existence is denied. And so, therefore, there is this very strange dynamic here where usually when you encounter these types of phantomals or demonic cryptids, they come and they disappear in some fleeting moment. But this one seems to actually care about the fact that we know he is there.
Does it have one eye?
No. Papa Bawa has, as a matter of fact, I have a picture of, it's an illustration from the Fortean Times. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, you'll find the link there to joshuapwarren.com. There's no period after the P, joshuapwarren.com. And I have a picture of Papa Bawa there as represented by an illustrator who collected the accounts from the reporter who went down there. And the fact that this thing appears and violates people in the most horrific, disgusting way, and then tells them, "If you do not proclaim this to everybody you know, I'm going to come back, and you haven't seen the half of it." It's unbelievable. It's outrageous. It's extraordinary. And that is why, for me, hands down, when you see that there are actual people who say this has happened to them, and they are sincere, and there are tears in their eyes, this is the scariest cryptid, the scariest phantomal on the planet.
Jeez, they're all scary. To the phones we go. Let's go to Travis, first-time caller, South Philly. Hey, Travis, go ahead. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good. Go ahead.
I just wanted to call. I had two quick questions. One, I originate from the Garden State, and something called the Jersey Devil. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. We both are.
Okay. Do you think that is like half human, half like demon, or do you think that it is a shapeshifter, like some kind of a prehistoric animal? What's your take on the Jersey Devil?
Joshua, have you ever gone hunting for the Jersey Devil?
You know, I have never personally gone into those pine barrens looking for the Jersey Devil, but the Jersey Devil did make Micah Hank's Graylian Report top 5 list. Because, you know, for those who don't know, the Jersey Devil dates back to the 1700s, and there was a woman named Mother Leeds who supposedly had already given birth to 12 children, and she said that if she had a 13th, he would be the devil himself. And so she supposedly gave birth to this baby that then quickly transformed into this monstrous gargoyle-like creature that went flapping away. And since then, people have seen this kind of awkward half-horse, half-bat gargoyle thing that has been tromping around that area. There have been some occasions where it has bitten dogs. I don't know that it's ever attacked a person. But when you imagine that the Jersey Devil seems to sort of be a conglomeration of a kangaroo, a horse, and a bat, if you can imagine such a weird thing, it's difficult to think that, you know, to imagine this could be some mistaken identity, that somebody could be seeing anything else in New Jersey. Now, as far as what it is, why it's there, we don't really have any solid evidence to support these reports in the modern age, but Obviously, coming face to face with this thing is shocking, but there's just nothing there that we can grasp onto to substantiate some of these reports.
Okay, there's a lot of stories. I've heard that there's been, like, altars found in the woods, like these crazy altars that people go out and get lost, and they find, like, a huge wooden, like, altar, and then, like, you know, wander away, come back to get, like, some documentation, and the thing's just gone, like, it's made out of trees and stuff. And then I've heard another story, like, from this book about the Jersey Devil, that he was dating a mermaid off of LBI, off Barnegat Light, like, crazy stories.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one thing about these experiences. You know, people say they see the Jersey Devil to this day. And, you know, when I was putting this list of scary things together, there were other things that were scary that didn't fit into this particular list, like the Bell Witch. And, you know, these are instances of some type of a creature or entity that people still talk about that are horrifying, and yet, really, aside from the anecdotes, we just don't really have anything else that we can grasp onto that will help us understand more about them.
You know, that devil dragon that you talked about, that it looked like a pterodactyl, I'm getting a lot of emails from people who have seen that image. That scares them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you can imagine, you know, when you go to a museum and you look up and you see that pterodactyl model or skeleton hanging from the ceiling, it looks intriguing, but you know it's just a model. You know it's just a figment of the past. If that thing, however, sprung to life and it's squawking and it's flying around, then you can imagine at that point how terrifying it is, because they have these razor-sharp teeth. And do you know that one of the strangest reports I've ever come across that I wrote about in my book Pet Ghosts was about a group of railway workers in France in the 1800s who supposedly cracked open some big stone, and they said that this black, oily, leathery-looking pterodactyl sort of thing came stumbling from the rocks and squawked and fell over and died at their feet. And as so many of these stories go, we don't know to this day what happened to those remains. It's almost like there's some vast conspiracy to swallow up remains of these very extreme cryptid-type sightings that occur from time to time. And it makes you wonder whether or not it is possible that an airborne creature could still be out there. But either way, even if it's not there, we know that ghosts exist. We know that people have these experiences. So why should we only restrict the idea of an apparition to humans or pets? Why is it not possible that we can see the apparitions of these creatures that were there millions of years ago? And when they appear, they are so foreign to anything we can relate to, it's absolutely paralyzing.
All right. Now we go to Evansville, Indiana. Adam, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi. excuse me.
Sure.
I was wondering if you've heard reports about, like, a visually telepathic experience from, like, a chupacabra or something, because I was wondering really about what I heard when I heard this cackle in the wild after I woke up. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, you know, as far as a telepathic connection, I'm not sure about that, but I will tell you, however, that the idea that the chupacabra is just some creature that is attacking livestock and killing it in a very crude manner, and then usually these things turn out to be mangy canines, that is very far from what I have found when I've gone down to Puerto Rico, and I've spent a lot of time in Puerto Rico, and you talk to people who have encountered the chupacabra, and it is an upright, bipedal, almost demonic-looking thing with spines on the top of its head.
On the top of its head. Yeah, I've seen when I was waking up. I thought it was a hallucination or like the remnants of a dream, and I went outside to have a cigarette, and I hear this just like thousands of voices. Like I heard it a couple weeks ago, and I heard it.
Well, you know, the thing about aliens, and, you know, last week I did a report on aliens, and I was talking about the fact that all these reports of encounters with grays or reptilians include the idea that they can sort of read the broadcast that comes from a person. And the Chupacabra, according to the purest reports, closest to the source, compiled by people like Jorge Martin, this researcher in Puerto Rico, demonstrate that the Chupacabra appears and operates with dexterity, is able to use its digits to open up cages and take chickens or whatever it wants to. And then when people see it, it develops this kind of distortion around it, this warp-like effect of light, and then it just spirits itself away. It rockets off into the sky like the Tasmanian devil and vanishes. And this is clearly not the product of some type of a mangy a coyote or something. And so in that regard, we're dealing with some type of a paratemporal entity, as I called it in my new book, The Secret Wisdom of Kukulkan. And when these beings appear, they are like a type of alien, but for some reason, this particular type of alien with this telepathic contact, it has this interest in the biological organisms on this planet.
For some reason. But you believe some of these or most of these are dimensional as opposed to physical?
That's the only way that you can explain what is happening in the reports that you get. I mean, people all together, I mean, if you sit down and you collect these reports, and you know, after almost 20 years of investigating these things,
you've got a file.
My team and I, we've sat down and we've sort of taken all these files and we've categorized them and we've looked at all the characteristics. And when it comes to something like the Chupacabra or many of these creatures, if you are to, and obviously there are people who make things up, there are people who imagine things, people who lie, people who pull pranks, people who produce hoaxes, which is why we're so interested in hoaxing. But if you look at the most credible reports, you find that time and time again, the only way you can explain all of the traits attributed to these creatures is if you accept the fact that life exists beyond the simple boundaries of this realm we consider physical, and that there are creatures on this boundary that sort of pop in and out.
Joshua P. Warren, until next week, my friend, don't scare us too much next time, all right?
Well, I can't promise that, but it's always a pleasure. Thank you, George.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Gina Salvati, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.